Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Every week at this time, Canada Dry gives you a chance to pit your brains against ours. It's easy money, ladies and gentlemen, and here's how to get it. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions per letter. If your question is used, you receive $5 and $10 additional if it stumps the board. So you may win $15 in all. Don't worry yourself into an early grave if our editorial staff changes or edits your question slightly. All questions become the property of Information Please. Letters with questions are to be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now, before I introduce our master of ceremonies, may I do just a little bragging for Canada Dry and Information Please. Last Saturday, the radio editors of the United States and Canada voted our show the best quiz program on the air. We want to thank them for their votes of confidence, and we are going to try to keep on deserving it. And now, Information Please puts its horn back in its pocket and presents its master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, Information Please is unrehearsed and informal. I do the pitching, and four authorities catch as catch can. The catchers tonight include our three regulars, Franklin T. Adams, famous columnist of the New York Post, John Kieran, the encyclopedia of Information Please, the irrepressible Oscar Levant, pianist, composer, at present musical director of the Broadway success, The American Way. Our fourth man tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is a mere beardless boy, a student at the University of Michigan, selected by his university to represent the spirit of youth on our program. We're glad to welcome 21-year-old Myron Wallace. And Myron, you don't mind if I call you Myron, do you? I hope that at 9 p.m. you won't look 20 years older than you do now. Now, if or when these gentlemen muff a question, Canada Dry rings up $10, paid out promptly to the person submitting the stumper. Okay, here we go. Now, the first question, coming in from Mr. Swift Adams of Rochester, New York, involves the use of alibis. What are the usual alibis under the following four circumstances? Suppose you're stopped by a policeman for speeding. What do you say? Myron.
Oh, the hospital, your wife?
My
that
wife?
That sort of thing. Anybody's wife.
Anybody's wife? No, that's even worse. That's even worse. You generally pick a wife and stick to it. Yes, that would be one alibi. Did you have another one, Mr. Levant?
Well, I just robbed a bank.
That'd be all right for you, Mr. Levant.
Well, I'm in a hurry.
Wouldn't work for everybody. Mr. Adams?
My speedometer didn't work.
Yes, that's the one most customarily used. My speedometer didn't work. It's always a good idea to follow that up by saying, haven't you got a couple of tickets to sell me for the police game? That's also very helpful. Now, what's the alibi that you use when you overbid in bridge? I don't play bridge, hence this happy disposition of mine. I'm going to accept practically any alibi. When you overbid in bridge.
What does that mean? I don't play bridge.
You don't play? Oh, you're out, Mr. Levant.
No, explain the whole game to me.
I will some other time. That leaves only three. Do you play bridge, Myron?
Well, not a very good game.
That's all right. You can get on this program not playing a very good game. Now, when you overbid in bridge, what alibi do you usually use? Guess you don't know.
I never overbid.
I know, but that's no alibi, Mr. Kieran. Well, the usual alibi, I think, is... You have one, Myron? No?
It's not a very good one.
I forgot we were vulnerable. Don't you often say that? I forgot we were vulnerable. That's one wrong.
Don't know anything about bridge.
Sorry. Oh, we caught them on this. When the cake doesn't come out so well, assuming that any of you baked cake... When the cake doesn't come out so well.
What are we, gals?
For the moment, for the nonce, as it were, for the nonce. Mr. Adams.
The stove didn't work.
Stove didn't work? They do say that. Myron.
The fuller brush man kept me at the door.
That's a good one. I'm going to accept that. Well, thank you very much. That's a peach. And now I really ought to throw this one at you, Myron. When you flunked an exam, what do you generally say? Or don't you ever flunk an exam, Myron?
Oh.
Too modest.
Grades will be out next week. Oh, I'd say offhand, though. Well, It's the truth, though. I don't ever remember having been in the situation.
Oh, well. Well, a very, very bright boy. Mr. Adams, you remember having been in that situation, no doubt.
I don't think anybody here remembers such a thing.
Yes. Nobody from Michigan. All right,
Mr. Kieran. I think you're barking up the wrong tree, boy.
I'm the wrong man. All right, Mr. Kieran, you flunked an examination.
I studied the wrong book.
Well, we got 3 out of 4 on that. I think just to make you downhearted, we ought to ask for 4 out of 4 on that, and so that's going to cost Canada Dry $10. Going out to Mr. Adams.
That's offhand.
Nice work, boys. What can you do with this one? It comes from Dorothy Bachmeyer of Seattle, Washington. Now, you have to go back to your mother goose on this one. Think back to your mother goose. On what charge might each of the following be brought to justice? On what charge? First is the sparrow. On what charge would the sparrow be brought to justice? Mr. Adams.
Murder.
Murder, yes. What did the sparrow do?
Killed Cock Robin.
He killed Cock Robin, yes, with his bow and arrow. Thank you very much. The Knave of Hearts. The Knave of Hearts. Mr. Kieran.
Thievery. He stole some tarts.
He stole some tarts. But in justice to him, we must remember that he reformed at the end, brought back the tarts. Three, the man I met when I was going to St. Ives. Mr. Kieran.
Triple bigamy.
Polygamy.
Yeah, double, triple bigamy, polygamy, heptogamy, actually.
Yeah, that'd be it.
Heptogamy.
Yeah.
Had seven
wives.
I think you might convict him of lunacy just as well as polygamy. Seven wives, or that's 3 out of 3. How about little Tommy Tittlemouse? Little Tommy Tittlemouse. This is a tough one, little Tommy Tittlemouse.
What's the name of that book?
Little Tommy Tittlemouse. Mother Goose. Don't you remember it?
Never heard of it.
You never were a child, Mr. Levant. You ought to try it sometime. Lovely experience. Little Tommy Tittlemouse.
Lived in a little house.
Yes, but that's not a crime.
On the contrary.
Well, the proper answer is poaching. He caught fishes in other men's ditches. Remember that now? He caught fishes in other men's ditches. You won't accept it?
Never got up to that.
Well, you don't know your little Tommy Tittlemouse.
No.
What can you do with Goosey Gander? What charge could you bring against Goosey Gander? Miss Curran.
Being a vagrant.
Why?
Wandered.
Wandered. Where'd he wander?
Upstairs and downstairs
and in my lady's chamber.
Nice chorus work, gentlemen. Nice chorus work. Yes, you might convict him of that. Trespassing might be the proper word. And also another crime.
He's in that...
Throwing a man downstairs.
Yes, but that... what would you call that in legal language?
Mopery.
I beg pardon? No.
Assault
and battery. Assault. Yes, assault and battery.
I know my mother goes.
You knew that, didn't you?
I know my mother goes.
But you didn't come in on this question
at all. Assault. I said assault.
Oh, assault. Yes, but you have to add battery.
Battery.
Add battery.
Sure.
Now, while we're on the question of crime, I ought to mention that some weeks ago, on January 3rd, Cornelia Otis Skinner appeared on this program. We had a somewhat similar question. And to one of the questions, she answered, Peeping Tom. And I didn't accept peeping as a crime. And many listeners, particularly attorneys, have criticized us for refusing to accept peeping as a crime. And they maintain that it is. And I'm awfully sorry. And hereafter, with information, please, remember, gentlemen, peeping is a crime.
The state does it. The state listens in on phone conversations.
Yes, is that peeping?
Well, I don't know.
Sounds more like poaching. All right, that's 4 out of 5, and they were supposed to get 4 out of 5 on that. See what you can do with this one. From Mr. William Russell of Chicago. If you were arranging a score for a movie for each of these characters, what familiar song would you select for each one? That's a tough one, eh? Want me to give you a little rest? Let's have Al Smith first. What familiar song would you... Myron, let's have Al Smith.
The Sidewalks of New York.
Yes, East Side, West Side, the Bowery. Very good. Carrie Nation. Mr. Levant.
She's the one who hatched up those things, those saloons.
Yes.
Drink to me only with thine eyes.
Drink to me only with... That's a pretty one. Very good. Very good, Mr. Levant. Father Divine. Father Divine. Mr. Levant again.
Wonderful. It's marvelous. You should care for me. Wonderful. Peace,
yes,
peace.
Yes, very good. That's very good, yeah. Or have you heard I married an angel might possibly be. W.C. Fields. W.C. Fields. Myron?
How dry I am.
All right. That'll get by very good, Myron. You learn a lot of things in Michigan that you're not supposed to.
When a buddy...
Now, the fifth and last on this is a surprise, because it's I. I suppose you fellows think of me more as a plot than a character, but I'm going to ask you to tell me what familiar song you would select for Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Levant.
Get out of town.
Oh.
I'm going to go right on with this program just as if Mr. Levant weren't in it. The next question comes from Mr. Rudolph Hirsch of Philadelphia. This is a question involving your knowledge of American history. I'm going to ask you to identify each of the following. There are four identifications. First, the Green Mountain Boys. The Green Mountain Boys. Mr. Levant.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, that wasn't you at all. Mr. Kieran.
Ethan Allen's Green Mountain Boys, and also another leader up there who were in the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
And stormed...
So what'd they capture?
Well, Fort Ticonderoga.
That's correct, yes. So it's the Troop of Irregulars from Vermont, which, by the way, is still full of irregulars, led by Ethan Allen, who captured Fort Ticonderoga.
Right.
That's right.
In
Johnny
the
Red.
Name of the Great Jehovah and the Continental Congress.
Say, this chorus...
Team.
Do you want to get into that, Myron, and lead them? Johnny Rebs. Identify Johnny Rebs. That's a pretty easy one, I think. Mr. Adams.
The Confederate Army.
Well, who gave the name to the Confederate soldiers?
The Northern soldiers.
Yes, the Northern. It was a name criticism. Johnny Rebs, name given by Northerners to Confederate soldiers during the Civil War. Now, the next one is perhaps a little harder. Who are the Molly Maguires? The Molly Maguires. Mr. Kieran?
That was a bunch of coal miners who were a little bit put out and banded themselves into a roughneck squad out there. And the United States government agents, I believe, brought them to justice and put them out of business.
That's approximately correct, yes. The secret organization of Pennsylvania miners. They were, I think, put down by the Pinkerton agency. By the Pinkertons.
Yeah.
You remember at what time they operated, Mr. Kieran?
It was around about...
Pick a date.
50-odd years ago.
1865 to 1875. That's good enough. Do you have anything to add to that?
I was a member of that. I come from Pittsburgh.
Really?
The Molly Maguires, they call it.
Molly Maguire Levant. Okay. All right, Molly. See what you can do with this one. The Gas House Gang. Mr. Myron, did you have the...
Well, that's not American history.
Oh, yes, it is.
It's civic. Star City. It's the St. Louis Cardinals, but
yes,
I mean...
Well, that's American history. That's perfectly all right.
Sorry, St. Louis.
St. Louis Cardinals, yes, under Frisch. And also it was given to another organization.
Well, it was originally in New York.
In New York.
10th and 11th Avenue.
10th Avenue. 10th Avenue Boys. And also to a corrupt political organization in Philadelphia.
Thank you to leave my name out of that.
Thank you, Mr. Levant. That's 4 out of 4. What can you do with this one? This comes from Miss Betty Branch of Memphis, Tennessee. What blonde, who moved in on a family of three, was forced to take it on the lam? This does not test your knowledge of American history. Mr. Adams. You thought you knew it. If you can get your mind off the blonde, I'll think of the question now for a moment.
Mary.
I beg your pardon?
Mary.
Mary? You mean the one who had the little lamb?
Yes.
What was the family of three that she moved in on? I think I've got you there.
You have me there.
Yeah, I think I have you there. Do you want to retire in disgrace?
Yes.
Or you'll come back and do better next time. How about it, Mr. Kieran? You know?
No, sir.
Myron? Mr. Levant? The blonde who moved in on a family of three and was forced to take it on the lamb is Goldilocks. Do you remember? Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Perfectly simple.
Like a vice president.
Myron? do you have a comment on that?
You should have had it in that bear question.
I should have had it in the bear question before. That's right. The next one from Miss Ona B. Whitcomb of East Cleveland, Ohio. Give the titles of 4 books or plays that mention possible members of a circus troupe. For example, Mark Twain's story, The Stolen White Elephant, would mention a possible member of a circus troupe. Do you get the idea?
Like Tony Galento, would that be bad?
Wouldn't be bad. No, it wouldn't be bad.
It's not a book, a play,
no,
nor
not
an
a book
animal.
Yet. No, he hasn't been dramatized yet.
You say. Tell him, John.
Won't let him in. Myron, do you have one?
I don't know whether it would count. He who gets slapped.
Well, I don't think... That is about a,
about
a circus background.
And they do slap clowns still.
They do slap clowns.
Down
pretty subtle. That's too subtle for this program. That may be okay out in Michigan. That's too subtle for us. Mr. Adams.
Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Oh, you're coming back, are you? Goldilocks and the Three Bears. All right. But I won't count that as three, Mr. Adams. Just one. Three bears would be one. Mr. Levant.
Ferdinand the Bull.
Ferdinand the Bull is perfectly all right. Do they have bulls in circuses much? these days?
They can switch if they don't like Bull.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they do have. I'll count a Bull.
Jumbo. Come on, Jumbo. That show, Jumbo.
Yeah, that's right. A Bull would do.
Jumbo.
Mr. Elephant.
Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright.
That's not a book or play. It's a poem.
The Lady or the Tiger?
You take it. The Lady or the Tiger. Yes,
thanks,
you stole that
Red.
From Mr. Adams,
yeah, I did.
Mr. Levant.
Suggestion.
That's three. Oh, I think we ought to have a few more.
Tony Galento, I like.
You want to stick to that for a while? See, you bring him in the latter half of the program. Mr. Adams, do you have one?
The Lion of St. Mark's.
Is it a book?
By G.A. Henty.
The Lion of St. Mark's by G.A. Henty. Very, very good. Mr. Kieran.
The Lion and the Mouse, but I don't remember who wrote it.
Charles Klein.
Charles Klein.
Yes, but stop sticking to lions, boys, will you? Let's have some more animals. How about The Daring Young Man on the Flying Trapeze?
How about
that would be one by William Saroy. And how about The Tattooed Countess by Carl Van Vechten? Mr. Kieran.
Horses, horses, horses.
All right, yes. Horses, horses, horses. That'll do. The Pony Rider Boys in the Ozarks. That's a cinch to stock up this circus. Well, let's see. So far, I find that because of a number of inexpert answers on the part of our experts, Canada Dry has paid out $20. And now, Mr. Cross, perhaps you'd like to pay Canada Dry the compliment of your expert testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. Oscar Wilde once wrote, "The only pleasant things to pay are compliments."
Lady Windermere's Fan, Act One.
Exactly. And since a compliment is the expression of admiration...
Webster's Dictionary, page 249.
Precisely, Mr. Fadiman. But to continue, since a compliment is the expression of admiration, the modern host can always compliment his guests by serving sparkling Canada Dry water. For their favorite drinks are livelier and better tasting when made with this fine club soda. They're livelier because of an exclusive process known as pinpoint carbonation, a process that enables Canada Dry water to retain its life and sparkle for 24 hours after the bottle has been opened. And they're better tasting because this sparkling water is produced with the same exacting care that is taken with Canada Dry ginger ale. So why not compliment yourself as well as your guests by placing at the very top of your shopping list sparkling Canada Dry water?
Why, Mr. Cross, that took only 47 seconds.
Well, then with the 13 seconds left, let me say simply that leading hotels, clubs, and restaurants compliment their guests by serving Canada Dry sparkling water.
Thanks, Mr. Cross. And now we'll get back to the last half of our program. Here's a question coming from Boston, from Mr. Ellis Parker of Boston. What would be the modern equivalent? That's in slang, you gather. And none of this 1908 slang, Mr. Adams. We want 1939 slang or nothing.
Practically yesterday for me.
All right, you can get out of this. What would be the modern equivalent of each of the following quotations from Shakespeare? The first is, "If music be the food of love, play on." But Mr. Curran.
Swing it, kid.
Okay. The next quotation, which is from Hamlet. "He is of a very melancholy disposition." Mr. Levant.
"He's a wet blanket."
"He's a wet blanket" is good. Mr. Adams, do you have one?
"Sourpuss."
Okay, and Myron.
"What a droop."
Gee, that's the collegiate slang. "What a droop." Slap him on the back, Mr. Adams. We need somebody like that in this program.
How many generations have we got here now?
We've got about six or seven. Here's one from Hamlet. "When we have shuffled off this mortal coil..."
What?
You don't know the line, do you, Mr. Levant?
I didn't hear it.
I'll give it to you again. "When we have shuffled off this mortal coil..." It's poetry, Mr. Levant. Mr. Kieran.
"Kick the bucket."
"When we kick the bucket." Do you have another one, Myron?
"Croak."
"Croak."
"Croak." All right. The two Michigan boys say croak.
The best one is "He Turned Cold." "He Turned Cold." It was just Wilson Meisner's famous one.
"He Turned Cold."
Yeah.
All right, I'll take that. And Wilson Meisner was a couple of years ago. Not very up to
date. He went to Michigan last year.
Did he? Hey, that makes it an all-varsity program this evening. Here's the fourth. "I have peppered two of them." That's from Henry IV, in case you don't know. "I have peppered two of them." All right, Mr. Levant.
"Knocked them off." "Drilled them."
"Bumped them off." Okay. And here's the fifth and last. "Lay not this flattering unction to your soul." Mr. Kieran.
"Don't kid yourself."
Okay, Mr. Kieran, that's right. Very good. What a control over the language these boys have. The next comes from Mr. A. Matthews of Ontario, Canada. And Mr. Matthews wants you to play the music which would be appropriate for each of the following periods of life. Babyhood, childhood, adolescence. That's a long word, Mr. Levant. Adolescence. What comes after childhood?
Puberty.
Thanks. Manhood and womanhood. Take your choice. And old age. Let's have some appropriate music for babyhood.
Well, that's easy.
It is easy. What are you going to play?
by Brahms.
All right, it's very pretty. Want to play a little more of it?
With repeats.
Well, the baby's growing up. Look out, Mr. LeVan. Not too much of it. All right, now let's have childhood, if you can.
You mean indeterminate childhood?
Childhood? Anything after about, three and a half. Three and three quarters make it. Childhood. Spring song?
Spring song.
Yeah, spring song. Yes, that would be good. That'd be fine.
Take me out to the ball game would be good, too.
That would be all right. How about adolescence? Adolescence. Adolescence is when you first fall in love, maybe.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That's what you think.
Romeo and Juliet with Tchaikovsky.
That's good. Oh, that's very nice. Yes, I love that. Very warming to the cockles of the heart. Thank you very much, Mr. Levan. You want to stick with that for a while?
No, I'm sick of that.
All right. We'll let adolescents go. Now, manhood and womanhood together, I believe that's the time of marriage, more or less. What can you do with manhood and womanhood?
You're going too
far. On the piano. All right, wedding march.
That's if you're lucky.
That's very nice and respected. You don't want to go on with that either, do you?
Well, I guess they do the lullaby again.
All right, let's have the lullaby. Information, please, gives you, by courtesy of Mr. LeVan, a complete pianistic picture of life. Now, old age.
You mean dead?
Well, pretty near dead, Mr. LeVan, pretty near dead.
Well, when they turn cold, they always play this.
All right, do that one.
That's a gloomy picture.
Yes, that lends us that ends on a nice, hilarious note. Thanks very much, Mr. LeVan. I'm glad to get that. Gee, we covered a lot of ground in that question. What can you do with this one? From Mr. Milton Simon of Bridgeport, Connecticut. What have these four men in common? William Shakespeare, Woodrow Wilson, Robert Taylor, Huey Long. Mr. Kieran.
They each moved their legs when they walked.
You know, I have no comeback on that one, Mr. Kieran. No comeback. That's undoubtedly true. And if I were in a better-natured mood than I am, I'd accept it.
Well, they weren't vice
Myron, how about it?
Mr. Fadiman's, Mr. Kieran's going to have tough sledding next week on account of that one.
Yeah, he's going to have very tough sledding on account of that one. You watch what happens to you next week, Mr. Kieran. Do you know the answer to the question, Myron?
I know the answer to why I was going to have tough sledding.
No. That's not the question. What is the answer, however?
No snow.
Oh, come. This collegiate slang is too much for me. Tough on you, too, Mr. Adams, isn't it?
It's an epigram.
Who are the four again?
Oh, you're still on this question? All right. I didn't know you were interested in this question. Here it is. What have these four men in common? William Shakespeare, Woodrow Wilson, Robert Taylor, and Huey Long.
They were all college men.
They're all college men?
All except Shakespeare.
What colleges did they attend?
That's true. He didn't go. I don't know anything about Shakespeare.
No, that wouldn't be the answer, I don't
think. They all went to college.
No, I'm sorry. The answer is this. William Shakespeare, Woodrow Wilson, Robert Taylor, and Huey Long, and I'm looking particularly at you, Mr. Kieran, were all well-known football players of recent years, playing with Notre Dame, Army, Columbia, and Army, respectively.
Well, I was right. I said they were all college.
I know, but you didn't mean that, Mr. LeVan.
How do you know?
I can tell by your eye. Mr. Kieran, would that be right? They were all the
well-known
footballers.
Yeah, that's
right. Some nicknames in there.
Well, Huey is a nickname, but I think the others are not. I've got Huey in quotes.
Who was Woodrow Wilson?
Woodrow Wilson?
Played for Army.
Played for Army some years ago.
Where was
last year.
Last year. All right.
I was away last year.
Stumped you on that one. Canada Dry, therefore, is going to ring up $10 on that. Thank you. Now, Mr. P.H. Clark of Winnetka, Illinois, sends in the following. Each of the following is a member of a famous group of three. Name the other two in each case. The first is Meshach, M-E-S-H-A-C-H. Mr. Adams.
Shadrach and Abednego.
Who are they?
There were three boys that went in the fiery furnace.
Yes, from the Bible. And by the way, there's a very good spiritual written about Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, but I don't suppose any of you listen to the radio, so you wouldn't know. Do you know it, Myron?
Oh, though. Some band, I don't know the name of it, has done an excellent... A lot of bands have been doing excellent records of that.
Yes,
clean version.
Yes, I don't think that sounds like a plug, so we left that on. That's all right. Tinker, name the other two. They all know that. All right, Mr. LeVan, we'll give you a chance.
Tinker's Evans a chance.
Yes,
Boston, Chicago Cubs.
Chicago Cubs.
1909.
Double play combination. Mr. Adams, didn't you once write a poem about Tinker to Evers to Chance?
Yes, only once.
Only once. That was a good poem, wasn't it?
Let's have the other two of the famous trio, of which Aramis is one. Aramis, Mr. Adams.
Porthos and Aramis.
Porthos and what? Take it easy, Mr. Adams.
Porthos and Athos.
Porthos and Athos. You've got me going now. Porthos and Athos. Yes, forming what trio?
The Three Musketeers.
Yes. I beg your pardon. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Never had so much politeness on this program before. Go on, get into that microphone, Mr. Levant. What can you do with Chico? Chico? Mr. Levant.
Harpo and Groucho,
yes. Weren't they originally four marks, brother?
There were five. Zeppo and Gummo.
Yeah. All right. And fifth and last on this trio question, Nod. Nod, Myron.
Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod
in Eugene Field's famous poem. Well, that was a pretty easy one, don't you think? Let's see what you can do with this one.
Not for Mr. Adams.
Oh, Mr. Adams did pretty well. He just didn't know how to say Athos, that's all. It's a hard word. The next question from Mr. Austin D. Hall of Newtonville, Massachusetts. How is each of the following associated with iron? Iron, you know, the metal iron. One, Joe McGinnity. Mr. Kieran.
He was called Iron Man Joe McGinnity because he, on four or five occasions, pitched and won doubleheaders ball games in an afternoon. Three occasions, I believe.
And, Mr. Kieran, wasn't Mr. Muldoon also called the Iron Man, or was it the Solid Man?
Solid Man.
I beg your pardon. All right. Oliver Cromwell. What's his association with iron? Can any of you think of that? Mr. Kieran?
His troops were called the Ironsides.
Why?
Well, they had the breastplate of hammered iron or steel or whatever it was, and they were a very hard-to-beat organization.
Yes, tough crew. Old Ironsides, they were called. That's two out of two. But what's Jack London's association with iron? Jack London's association with iron. The American novelist, Jack London.
Reference to his life or to his work?
Either one. You take your choice. Don't try to get anything out of me, Mr. Levant. I am what is known as implacable. Sorry. The answer is that Jack London wrote a very famous novel of the future, sort of futurist novel called The Iron Heel. The Iron Heel. And that'll be one wrong. General Johnson. A former guest of information, please. Mr. Adams.
Iron Pants.
He was called Iron Pants. Yeah, that's right. And fifth and last, Tom Mooney. What is his association with iron? Myron?
Iron bars.
Yes, but I don't think that's the association I'm looking for. Tom Mooney?
About the union?
Mr. Levant?
A union connected with iron?
No. Well, no, not precisely.
Well?
Well, the answer is that he was... a former iron molder. Well, that gives us only 3 out of 5, and that's going to cost Canada Dry $10. I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we'll have time for tonight. Canada Dry seems to be set back to the tune of $40. In a moment, I'll give you the lineup for next week, but in the meantime, Mr. Cross has a word to say.
Have you sent for your information, please, game? The game that will permit you to play Information Please in your own home, just as we do here in the studio. If you haven't, here's all you have to do to get your copy. Tear off the labels from 2 bottles of any of Canada Dry's many beverages. The labels don't have to be perfect, so don't worry if you've torn the corners. Then mail both your labels, or pieces of labels, and 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York. If you live in Canada... The address is Canada Dry, Toronto, Ontario. So write for this fun-packed game tonight. But along with your 2 labels and 10 cents, be sure to include your own name and address.
Thanks, Mr. Cross. Next week at this time, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will be back, ready for the fray. The well-known playwright and author, Mr. Russell Krause, who has graced our little program before, will be with us again. And finally, as our 4th guest, we present that genial humorist, author of A Pearl in Every Oyster and other collections of good, clean fun, Mr. Frank Sullivan. Remember, letters with questions are to be addressed to Information Please, Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.